I try to practice what I preach. I'm Joseph. This is Input English. Today I have a fun discussion. It's a topic that comes up pretty commonly in the day-to-day. It centers around the idea of honesty. This will give us a great opportunity to share a lot of fun expressions, some interesting idioms, a lot of vocabulary that will be useful to you. This channel is all about comprehensible input. My goal is to continue making videos that people around the world can use to improve listening comprehension and pronunciation, eventually confidence in speaking ability. This is the way comprehensible input works. If you need more information about how comprehensible input works, I have a lot of videos on this channel. There is a playlist for language learning. So let's get started. I try to practice what I preach. What I'm saying is I try to be honest. I strive to be genuine. I don't want to be a phony. So let's explore those ideas. The original phrase, I try to practice what I preach, comes from the New Testament. As I recall, it is referenced to Matthew, the book of Matthew. I'm not a Bible scholar, but that's what I recall. If someone practices what he preaches, then he is honest. He is not a hypocrite. There are a bunch of expressions that are along the same lines. For instance, someone can lead by example. If you lead by example, then the behavior you show is consistent with what you say. I like people who lead by example. There is a casual expression you will hear referring to someone who walks the walk. The rest of that phrase goes like this. He walks the walk. He doesn't just talk the talk. There are people in this world who are all talk. If someone is all talk, then you can't depend on them to do what they say or perform as well as they claim. If you refer to someone as all talk, that is not a compliment. That is a big criticism. I don't want to be all talk. I want to walk the walk. Now, in contrast, you might hear someone say, do as I say, don't do as I do. That phrase is attributed to a book by John Selden dating back to 1654. It's very much part of American English. Do as I say, don't do as I do. That is also called the hypocrite's motto. Picture a father smoking a cigarette, telling his son to not smoke. What he's saying is, do as I say, don't do as I do. If someone is the real deal or the genuine article, then they have authenticity. They are honest the way they present themselves. They're not just a bunch of false claims. So in the use of these phrases in daily life, if someone walks the walk, then they could be said to be the genuine article. They could be said to be the real deal. Another expression that is a compliment is, what you see is what you get. That's often used to describe people. Someone who is authentic, someone who is not a phony, is described by the phrase, what you see is what you get. So how did I get onto this topic? Well, something happened. If you watched my last video, you saw that I made a video in Central Florida. I was in Lakeland, Florida for a family and friends gathering. It was a short trip, but in order to get there, I had to fly nearly 3,000 miles, and that has its consequences. If you've watched a lot of videos on this channel, you would know that I am a language learner. I am using comprehensible input to acquire Spanish and German, And my personal metric is to get 2 hours of German each day and 1 hour of Spanish each day. Now, if I say that those are my goals, but I never attain those goals, you could say that I am a hypocrite. I'm not authentic. I'm a phony. And of course, I don't want to be a phony. So I want to get those metrics. I want 2 hours of German each and every day. I want my hour of Spanish each and every day. But things happen, and my trip to Florida for the gathering of the gaggle. Now, what's that expression? In English, when you have a collection of things or creatures, there is often a word that describes that group. For instance, if you have a lot of sheep, that is a flock of sheep. You can have a flock of chickens, but you can't have a flock of cows. There are no flocks of horses, because horses and cows are herds. If you have a bunch of horses, that's a herd of horses, or a herd of cows, for instance. If you have a lot of quail, quail being a small game bird, if you have a lot of them, that would be a covey of quail. Some of these words that describe groups of animals are very imaginative and fun. What would be a group of owls? Do you know? You can put that in the comment section if you know the answer. We can turn this into a little game. Feel free. But I'm not going to keep everybody in suspense. A group of owls is called a parliament of owls. Isn't that fun? So what is a group of geese? A gaggle of geese. If you have a lot of geese, it's not a flock. It's not a herd. It's certainly not a parliament. It's a gaggle. So there is a common expression, if you get a bunch of people together, like a family or a group of friends, you can say you had a gathering of the gaggle. Now, the reason that phrase caught on in American English is the beginning of the two words, starting with the G, is attractive to the human mind. People are attracted to alliteration, and we know that. If you were going to name a cartoon character and you wanted your cartoon to be very popular with children, you might name that cartoon character Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck or Boo Boo Bear. There's a lot of alliteration in cartoon characters. A gathering of the gaggle is an expression with alliteration that has caught on. It's not specific. You can use a gathering of the gaggle for members of a band or members of a family, people who work together. Anytime you bring a group of people together, you can call that a gathering of the gaggle. And that's what we had. We had a group of friends and family come together in Central Florida for a gathering of the gaggle. But it had its consequences. In the United States, we have 4 time zones. So if it's noon in California, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Lakeland, Florida. Those 3 time zones wreak havoc with travelers because humans are very dependent on a sleep cycle, a day-night cycle. And if you disrupt our daily routine, if you disrupt our time zones enough, we can get tired, we can be cranky, we can have problems getting to sleep, we can have difficulties. So traveling across time zones, the symptoms you get are called jet lag, because typically these are symptoms you get when you travel rapidly across time zones. A lot of countries around the world don't have different time zones. The whole country is in one time zone. The United States, being 2,800 miles across, has four time zones. Canada is broader, and Canada has six time zones. In addition to ours, Pacific, Mountain, Central, and Eastern Time, Canada has Atlantic Time and Newfoundland Time. Newfoundland Time is funny because it's only 30 minutes ahead of Atlantic Time. It's not a full hour. Until this year, I assumed that all time zones were an hour apart. But because of having this channel and talking to people around the world, I found out that some time zones are shifted by 30 minutes. Newfoundland time is an example. Another time zone that is shifted by 30 minutes is Indian Standard Time. India is a very broad country, but more than 100 years ago, they addressed the problem of time standard by creating India Standard Time. In order to accommodate people's needs, they set it at that 30-minute offset. And it works for them. It's worked for them for more than 100 years. But when I did a podcast with a content creator who is living in India, I had to be aware of that 30-minute offset in addition to all the hours, because she is halfway around the world. So when I went to Lakeland, Florida, I had the three time zones to deal with, plus the fatigue of the travel. My time was heavily subscribed because we had made plans to be together. And so I didn't have a lot of discretionary time each day to make videos and to get comprehensible input at my usual rate of 3 hours a day. I missed my metrics. I did make a video in Lakeland. It was a fun experience. What you couldn't tell from the video is that I made this video with my son. He and I were walking around this park, and I would stop and make video footage so that I could edit it into the video. And he watched the process. Like many people, he wasn't interested in being on YouTube and being part of the process. He was very polite about it, but it was clear he doesn't do YouTube, and that's fine. So I was able to combine taking a walk with my son and having a pleasant walk along a lake in Florida with making a video to get content made for publication. So basically, what happened is my plans to get a lot of input, shall we say, went to crap. That is a common expression. Crap is a funny word in English. We tend to use it when we don't want to say a dirty word. Humans have a lot of words for human waste. And sometimes the words that are used for human waste are considered dirty words. They are not polite words, and you wouldn't say them in polite company. This channel doesn't use any profanity. I don't say any profanity because I want this channel to be inclusive. I want people to be able to watch this content and not be offended. If someone's interested in learning about English profanity, there are plenty of sources on the internet and on YouTube to learn those explicit words. You won't find them here. If someone uses an exclamation and the common explanation would use a dirty word, instead they might say, "Oh, crap." And that's not a dirty word. You can say that in front of almost anyone without offending them. So when I say my plan to get input at my usual rate turn to crap, that's actually a polite expression. It's a casual expression. You might not say that in a formal setting, but it is not foul language. It describes what happened. You could also say that I was overcome by events, or OBE. If one is overcome by events, then the circumstances prevented me from doing what I wanted to do. So OBE would be a very appropriate way of describing my experience. So simply put, I failed. I didn't get my comprehensible input every day because I was overcome by events. I failed. You might hear someone say that they failed bigly. Now that is an example of the funny way the English language evolves. Adverbs in English frequently end in ly. So I could speak with you calmly, and the word calmly is the adverb which modifies how I'm speaking. I'm speaking calmly. I'm sitting comfortably. So if something is big, it's just big. But someone at some point changed the word big, which is an adjective, into an adverb, and so they said that they failed bigly. That expression started out to be funny, to be humorous, but it got into the language. I don't know who promoted it, probably through social media or perhaps broadcast media. I could certainly imagine a late night host talking about something that failed bigly. So you may hear that. I admit it, I failed bigly. I didn't get my input. So how do I respond? What do I do about that? Well, it's pretty straightforward. Recover. Realize it's not a big deal. This disturbance in my daily routine that prevented me from getting input was temporary. It wasn't going to last forever. It was totally understandable. I had other things I had to do. But when I got back to California, I set about my goal of getting back to my routine. I tried to get back into the rhythm of it. That's an expression. If you try to get back into your usual rhythm, you're trying to get back to your original routine. You're trying to get back to normal. And that's what I did. I tried not to stress over it. I didn't want to beat myself up for this miniature failure. It's not a big deal. Just get back into the rhythm of it. I use habits to be productive because habits are much more durable than willpower. I needed to be aware of the need for rest and sleep. Transcontinental travel with three time zones is very fatiguing. And if we are fatigued and we force ourselves to get input, it's not going to be very effective. Our brain is not going to process that information and use it as effectively if we are really tired or sleep deprived. So I gave myself permission to rest. Another expression that you'll hear. If you give yourself permission to do something, you accept the necessity of doing that thing. The idea of giving yourself permission to do something is to take stress off of you. Something funny happened, and I didn't realize it until after the fact. I arrived home in California on Sunday and got to bed at a reasonable hour. When I woke up the next day, unbeknownst to me, that is unknown to me, we had experienced the onset of daylight time. Each year in the late winter, the time changes, the time standard changes, and so we are now on daylight time, But last week we were on standard time. So I had the transcontinental travel, the fatigue from that, the time zone change, and then actually the onset of daylight time decreased the time zone change by 1 hour. It mitigated the time zone change. For that, I was grateful. So I am back. I'm able to get my input. I'm getting back into my usual routine, my usual habits. I will have no trouble getting my desired 3 hours of input today. The reason I share this with you is you may see some parallels in your situation. You may see times in your life when you're not able to do the things you want to do. So my intent, of course, for this channel is comprehensible input. I want to introduce vocabulary and expressions always in context. But I also like to have some food for thought. Food for thought is an expression for something that is thought-provoking, something that causes us to think about things. If something is thought-provoking, that's usually good. We don't use thought-provoking as a negative expression. If something is food for thought, that's always good. So I hope you enjoyed this. Hopefully it was food for thought. I invite comments below. And if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.